Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. India After Gandhi by Ramachandra Guha is a sweeping account of India's political and social history from independence in 1947 through the end of the 20th century. Rather than treating freedom as a neat turning point, Guha frames it as the beginning of an immense experiment building a democratic nation in the aftermath of partition, mass displacement, and communal violence. The book follows the making of institutions, the battles over language and federalism, and the recurring tension between central authority and regional aspirations. It also tracks how ordinary citizens, activists, journalists, and political leaders shape the republic through elections, protests, policy debates, and cultural change. Known for its narrative drive and archival breadth, the work connects high politics with everyday life, showing how democracy survived amid poverty, diversity, and periodic crises. As a history of choices and contingencies, it offers readers a grounded way to understand why modern India looks the way it does. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, partition, refugees, and the first tests of the new republic. The book begins in the shadow of partition, when independence arrived alongside one of the largest and most traumatic migrations in modern history. This opening period is presented as the first and most severe stress test. For the fledgling state, millions of refugees needed protection, resettlement, egg, and livelihoods while violence threatened to spiral across communities. Guha emphasizes how these pressures shaped early governance, from emergency relief to the creation of administrative routines capable of coping with crisis at scale. He also explores the psychological and political legacies of partition, including hardened identities, contested memories, and the long-term impact on relations between India and Pakistan. At the same time, the early leadership faced an equally daunting task of holding together a territorially and culturally diverse country. The integration of princely states and the establishment of legitimate authority across vast regions required negotiation, coercion, and careful symbolism. By treating these developments as interconnected, the narrative shows why the Indian state's earliest decisions around citizenship, security, and pluralism reverberated far beyond 1947, influencing later debates about national unity, minority rights, and the acceptable limits of state power. Secondly, constitutional democracy and the challenge of building institutions. A central theme is how India attempted something many observers doubted was possible: mass democracy in a poor, multilingual, deeply stratified society. Guha tracks the framing of the constitution and the painstaking effort to translate constitutional ideals into working institutions such as an independent judiciary, professional civil services, and an election machinery capable of reaching remote villages. The story highlights the importance of procedural legitimacy, including universal adult franchise and regular elections, as a stabilizing force even when governments were weak or contested. The book also examines tensions embedded in the constitutional order: individual rights versus group claims, religious freedom versus secular state practice, and the need for development planning alongside political competition. Guha pays attention to how institutions were shaped, not only by elite design, but by public pressure, party organization, and the moral authority of leaders who could persuade as well as command. The result is a portrait of democracy as an ongoing craft, vulnerable to corruption and coercion, yet repeatedly renewed through electoral accountability, judicial review, and civic activism. This institutional lens helps explain both the resilience and the chronic friction that characterize Indian political life. Thirdly, language, federalism, and the negotiation of national unity. India's unity is shown as negotiated rather than assumed, especially through conflicts over language and the distribution of power between the center and the states. Guha describes how demands for linguistic recognition and state reorganization became defining political movements, forcing the national leadership to balance fears of fragmentation against the democratic logic of acknowledging cultural majorities within regions. The narrative illustrates why federalism in India is not merely a constitutional arrangement, but a practical method for managing diversity. Language debates, including the status of Hindi and the role of English, are presented as high-stakes contests over identity, opportunity, and political influence. Guha also explores how regional parties and leaders emerged as durable forces, reshaping national coalitions and challenging centralized models of governance. At moments, the center responded with accommodation, redrawing boundaries and sharing authority. At other moments, it relied on coercive tools, creating cycles of resentment and resistance. By following these struggles across decades, the book shows that India's stability has often depended on flexible compromise and the willingness to adjust the political map to social realities. The broader lesson is that democratic unity can be strengthened through decentralization when institutions are willing to listen and adapt. Fourthly, wars, security, and the state under pressure. Guha places external conflict and internal security challenges at the heart of India's post-independence evolution. Wars and border disputes influence national identity, defense priorities, and the political standing of leaders, while also shaping how citizens understood sacrifice and sovereignty. The book shows that security concerns repeatedly expanded the reach of the state, sometimes improving capacity and cohesion, sometimes encouraging secrecy and heavy-handed tactics. Alongside external threats, internal insurgencies and separatist movements posed complex moral and strategic dilemmas: how to maintain territorial integrity while respecting democratic freedoms and regional aspirations. Guha traces how policing, intelligence, and emergency measures interacted with constitutional norms, highlighting the risks of normalizing exceptional powers. He also connects security politics to broader social conditions such as economic inequality, ethnic competition, and the perceived failures of representation. By treating security as both a political tool and a genuine necessity, the narrative helps readers see why certain conflicts persisted and why responses varied across time and place. The topic underscores a recurring tension in democratic states: protecting the republic without eroding the liberties and legitimacy that make the republic worth protecting in the first place. Lastly, economy, social change, and the rise of new political forces. The book links political developments to economic strategies and social transformation, showing how debates over planning, state-led development, and later market-oriented reforms affected everyday life and electoral alignments. Guha examines how aspirations expanded with education, urbanization, and media growth, creating new demands for jobs, dignity, and representation. He also follows the churn in party politics as older nationalist narratives faced challenges from movements rooted in caste mobilization, regional identity, and religious nationalism. These forces did not simply replace one another, they competed, overlapped, and reshaped the language of democracy. The narrative pays attention to how policy choices created winners and losers, influencing trust in institutions and the credibility of political promises. Social justice politics, including efforts to address historic disadvantage, is treated as both morally urgent and politically contentious, with consequences for coalition building and governance quality. By tracing these shifts through elections, protests, and cultural debates, Guha offers a way to understand how India's democracy changed character over time while remaining recognizably democratic. The topic highlights the central insight that democratic stability depends not only on constitutional design, but on whether citizens believe the system can deliver fairness, opportunity, and voice. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want a serious, readable history of modern India, including students, policy professionals, journalists, diaspora readers, and anyone trying to make sense of today's headlines through the lens of institutions and past choices. It can benefit a reader's life by sharpening civic literacy. It explains how democracies are built through compromises, administrative capacity, and constant negotiation among competing identities and interests. That perspective travels beyond India, offering lessons about federalism, minority protections, and the dangers of concentrating power during crises. Compared with many single-theme accounts of Indian politics, India After Gandhi stands out for its broad scope and narrative balance, connecting leaders and elections to social movements, regional conflicts, and cultural debates. It is also useful as a reference because it organizes a complex chronology into an intelligible story of cause and effect, making later events easier to place. For buyers choosing among histories of independent India, Guha's work is worth purchasing for its synthesis of political, social, and institutional history into one coherent arc, helping readers understand not just what happened, but why the democratic experiment endured and where its fault lines remain. If you would like to support Ramachandra Guha, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.